Glad to be here tonight. I wanted to kind of continue what we did this morning and getting into some of the reasons that this study presented as we kind of do our Summer Bible Institute, trying to save some time here and getting a few things done on a Sunday night. But remember, we talked this morning about these three great untruths again and what has contributed to it. And one of the things that we discussed was the rise of depression and anxiety in youth and how that's been promoted by our culture today. And especially, and we talked about the rise and the advent of social media. Spent a lot of time on that. I thought about doing a separate kind of little series on that, but if I start that, I'll probably be bogged down for another 3 to 4 weeks, and I don't want to do that to you. But it is truly an interesting study to see how social media has arisen in our culture, how it's been promoted, and how really it's very minimally supervised is the word, I guess. And just a word of caution to all of you that have, you know, young people and kids, you want to be very careful with what they're getting on. And I know, here you go, telling us what to do again, and we tell the parents at school, who do they think they are, blah, 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 and then stuff happens. They're like, well, I didn't know. And then their kids end up getting a lot of mess, and they're shocked and act like, if I only knew. Well, people try to tell you and warn, and so I'd be very cautious with those things. You know, there's apps I'm sure that maybe some of you have never heard of before. There's a lot of apps that I don't even know what's going on in some of them. Now, there's even apps on their phones that you can download that look like something innocent, and then when the kid goes in and punches in a special code, it opens up into a whole other thing that the parents have no idea about. There's a lot of those things that are available and that are out there, and I just encourage you to, if your child has those things, supervise them. Be careful with that. Go the extra mile, because what comes in, once it's in, it's in. And when I was a young person, the preacher would tell us that it's almost like a plow putting furrows down in your mind. And you may forget about it for a little while, but something will trigger it and it'll come back years down the road. I remember one particular preacher would had a former life of some things that, you know, that he got saved and delivered from, but he said, you know, I have to avoid certain things because it'll trigger thoughts in my mind from years ago. He said that, for example, he said, I know in one town, he said, there was a billboard, and I learned to drive another way, the long way home, because if I saw that, it would remind me of things, and my mind would start thinking back to my days of being in sin. And he said, I didn't want to think those things. So your mind, things go in there, and it's in there. And you may forget about it for a little while, but there's a furrow in there somewhere. And those things come back and can really take our attention away from the Lord. So social media and the things that our kids have access to can be very dangerous. Some of these apps I don't really think kids should have. I don't think a kid that's young should have Snapchat, just going to be honest with you. You may disagree with me, that's fine. I have it. I use it and I message my wife. That's who I message on Snapchat. And every now and then some friends send me videos and things. It's really convenient. It's good to communicate. But there's things on there that, once you see it, they delete. Well, they're in the servers, but the kids are like, oh, nobody's going to see this. It deletes. If they really want to get it, they can get it. And they've had to do that before in courts and things, and to go out and pull information from a server. And you can see what was on there that you thought disappeared. It's all out there somewhere in these massive servers and all these things, and they have access to it. I can hide what I'm saying and the dirty things I'm looking at, or these kids today are sending terrible pictures of themselves to boys and girls and things, and, oh, it's on Snapchat, it just go away. And just be cautious with those things and what you're allowing your kids to follow on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. Well, they don't use Facebook. I shouldn't say that. It's old fuddy-duddies use Facebook. The kids there, they think that's the oldest, dumbest thing out there. You know, they're on Instagram and all these other things and Tumblrs and I don't even know them all. But anyway, they're all out there swiping left and right, and I don't even know what half this stuff means. But most of it's not good. Most of it's not good. We need to be very cautious of that. So we spent some time on social media this morning, the smartphones and how it's really contributed, because remember when we said that Sean Parker, the first president of Facebook, that they designed it to give you that little dopamine hit. That was his exact words last year or 2 years ago in 2017 when they interviewed him. We designed it to give you that dopamine hit, to give you that little feeling so you just keep coming back for more. Keep posting those pictures. Keep looking for those comments. And when you're not getting them and your friends are, or, you know, those friends are saying this about you or whatever online, then you go into a state of depression and anxiety. And you're worried to death about what people are going to think on your social media. And this is where some of these things for the kids have come up. I wanted to continue on, though, go to the next reason. I did not mean to spend this morning 35, 40 minutes on one slide. I'm going to try to go faster tonight. The second reason that this study presented was, again, these reasons are purely secular reasons. They're not biblical reasons by any means. Again, we can go through God's Word and we can find some serious biblical reasons and some serious spiritual reasons of why the generations today are going these directions. But these are some good practical things for us to know anyway. Paranoid parenting. We talked about this a lot in the beginning. The helicopter parents we dealt with earlier this summer. Some other things like this. What about the cases of missing children, the movement to find missing children? I'm going to read a story that this book presents, okay? This is a lady, Skenazy is her last name. Her name was Lenore Skenazy. Back in 2008, she became kind of famous. Let me read the story. She permitted her 9-year-old son, Izzy, now this is 10 years ago, to ride the New York City subway by himself. Izzy had been begging for weeks to take him someplace he'd never been before and let him find his own way home. He wanted to do it, 9-year-old boy. So one sunny Sunday, you know, it wasn't peak times, it was just on a weekend, she decided the time was right. She took him along on a trip to Bloomingdale's, confident that he could find his way home and could ask a stranger for help if he needed it. She gave him a subway map, a metro card, a $20 bill, and quarters in case he needed to make a call. Then she sent him on his way. 45 minutes later, and right on time, Izzy arrived home where Dad was out there waiting, ecstatic that he had successfully done that. You think, well, that's kind of neat. Some parents might flip out about that. Was it the wisest thing to do? I don't know. 9-year-old boy, dangerous city. Sure, there's something bad could have happened. She was trying to teach her son to be able to deal with those things. Well, she published a column about it, about her experience about that in the New York Sun. And oh boy, she went on the Today Show and then the hate started pouring in. She was labeled as America's worst mom for letting her son do those things. And most people, the book says, most people would have been mortified by that nickname, but she embraced it. She embraced it. She said, we're too paranoid. And, you know, we need this overprotection and things. And again, there are legitimate situations. Of course, the cases of missing children. There's parents, Adam Walsh. Remember Adam Walsh? Maybe some of you have heard of Adam Walsh. He was 6 years old. His mother took him shopping to Sears in Hollywood, Florida, let him play at a kiosk promoting a new video Atari system. The kiosk had attracted some older boys. And so she let him stay there to watch while she went off to the lamp department for a couple minutes. Scuffle broke out over whose turn was next, and the Sears security guard kicked all the boys out of the store. Adam was too shy to speak up and say his mom was inside the store. He was lured into a car by a drifter and was, of course, taken away by a serial murderer who offered him, you know, candy and all these things, the typical thing you hear. And he actually is a kind of a brutal death. I don't really want to talk about it. And he was found dead in a canal about 130 miles away. And then, of course, Walsh is the man that began the America's Most Wanted, all those kind of things. And you've heard, maybe you've seen the stories and gone through that. And there, obviously, there's legitimate things. That there are bad people out there that are doing bad things. But, and I'll say this carefully, that's always been the case. It's just we hear more about it now because of all the media, the social media, the milk cartons. Y'all remember those back in the olden days, I guess? I remember those, and I'm not that old, I guess. But you had the kids on the milk cartons and billboards and all these things, and people know about it more. So the cases of missing children, the movement to find missing children. I remember being a kid in the 90s, and I was always being talked about on the news and always these special TV shows and things. And it really changed parents' perspectives. And I get it. You should be cautious in some situations. You should be. But, you know, like I've said many times, you know, my brothers and I drove our bikes. I say drove our bikes. My wife gets mad at me. She said, you ride a bike. I said, no, riding is passive. I'm driving the bike. But anyway, that's another debate for another time. We would drive our bikes all over the country and all over creation and come home just in time for lunch and go back at it again. My mom would probably get arrested for that today. You know, that's the way people are about this. There's a norms change and fears grew and people were upset about things. But the problem is it's an actual versus an imagined risk. An actual versus an imagined risk. Is there a risk? Yes. Has it maybe been blown out of proportion in some cases? Probably. Probably. And again, he said these paranoid parents, overprotection has taken the place of teaching young people to recognize a bad situation and leave. Instead of teaching them, we're going to always be right there so that they're never put in the position to have to make that decision. Okay, I mean, I guess I can see that in some ways, but isn't it also good to teach the young people? Here's things to avoid. Here's things that are right and wrong. Here's things to watch out for. Here's the kind of group of people that you don't want to hang out with or be friends with. But we don't want to do that because, of course, we hold another side of the psychological parenting of letting them choose their own path and so forth and so on. So we would never want to restrict them by telling them who they can hang out with. But we're just going to be there to protect them just in case. Instead of teaching them the things that they should do. That was a psychologist that they shared stories. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children feels that children of any age should not be permitted to use public restrooms alone. Now, I get it. There's been stories of people in a restroom nabbing kids or, you know, doing things that are inappropriate and so forth in the restroom. But here's what the psychologist offered these tips. Never send a child into a public restroom alone. Instruct your child to use a private bathroom stall rather than a urinal. Avoid restrooms with more than one entrance. I don't know about you, but there's hardly any restrooms that have more, maybe a ballpark or the civic center or something. Stand in the door and talk to your child throughout their time in the bathroom. Now, I can understand that there might be some fear of, there might be a pervert in the bathroom. But how about we also need to teach them, if you see this, you need to get away. Or if you see this, here's how you should react. So that in the rare occasion that he might encounter it, he knows how to respond. So teach him those things. But again, and I understand where they're coming from, but they've taken the paranoid parenting, the overprotection, to an extreme. And it becomes a danger in and of itself. A couple more stories that I'll share with you. And of course, there's pressures. There's pressures from other parents. Other parents make fun of and ridicule and destroy people on social media that would not be super protective. Or even schools. And even from laws that push parents to be more protective than they should be. Let me read you a couple other stories. 2015, two Florida parents were charged with felony child neglect when they were delayed getting home. Unable to get into his house, their 11-year-old son, now 11-year-old son, again, think back to what you were doing at age 11. I don't know, we would be left home all the time when I was 11 years old. We lived out in the country, and we'd go outside and run around the dogs and shoot basketball until it was dark and come in all black with dirt. You know, and maybe you can remember times like that. And I know we live in a different age, and we do have to be careful. But they left their 11-year-old son, so he decided, well, I'm just going to play basketball in the yard. He stayed right in his yard for 90 minutes, hour and a half, and he played basketball. A neighbor called the police. After being handcuffed, strip-searched, fingerprinted, held in jail overnight, the parents were arrested for negligence. The boy and his 4-year-old brother, who was not left alone, were put in foster care for a month. Took the kids away for a month. Even after being returned to their parents, the children were required to attend play therapy. Play therapy. The parents had no history of neglecting their children, no records whatsoever, and they were mandated to take therapy and parenting classes. Because a boy played basketball in his yard for an hour and a half. If I was 11-year-old, I'd be thrilled to death to be out there playing basketball for an hour and a half, because if mama was home, she would have said, go do your homework. And I didn't want anything to do with that. I'd rather be outside playing basketball. But these parents were arrested. Connecticut, 2014. A woman left her daughter alone in a car. Now, that's the big one today, isn't it? I mean, that's a double two-hander. And what makes me even sicker is they left the dog in. Saw videos when we went here breaking everybody's windows because a dog was in a car. Now, again, in the heat in Florida, people have died, and dogs have died. But these people, there's people that all they look for is that. Be the big bad hero. Never mind, I'll get off that because I might make some people offended. But, and you may have to go to my safe space in my office. Anyway, she went into CVS. This might sound bad to you, especially when you learn it was summertime and the car windows were closed. An alert passerby called the police. They were able to open the car door. The police reported that the child was responsive. She was not in distress, but here's the thing. The girl was 11 years old, and she told her mother she preferred to wait in the car rather than come into the store. And they called the police on her. I don't know, maybe the girl wasn't in distress. She was fine. It's in Connecticut. It wasn't super hot or anything. Just, you know, it's up north there. But everybody's in panic mode, paranoid. And one of the reasons why is, of course, the lawsuits and the laws and the liability, and people are scared to death of being sued. That's a whole other situation there. So when the police endorse safetyism and the laws endorse, I'm not against the police. I'm saying when the laws endorse safetyism and the police have to act, it forces the parents to overprotect. And so perhaps in some things it has gone to a little bit of an extreme. This also ties in the three great untruths that we've been talking about. We convince the children that the world is full of danger. We convince them that evil lurks in the shadows, on the streets, in the public parks, in the restroom. Is there evil? Yes. But we can bombard them with that to the point that they're emotionally prepared to embrace the untruth of us versus them. That we're the good people, but there's bad people everywhere, and all they want to do is hurt you. And it makes it in their mind that us versus them mentality. And then they become to believe that they feel unsafe. Now, what's great untruth is that about feeling? Always trust your feelings. Emotional reasoning. If you feel unsafe, then that means you are unsafe, even if someone's only speaking to you. Always trust your feelings. And then, of course, you're fragile. All these things tie in together. The paranoid, and again, it's nothing wrong with being protective, watching your kids and things of that nature. But are we depriving them of the experiences needed to be a successful adult? Are we depriving them of those things to be a successful adult? So again, parenting, yes, be careful, be cautious, protect, watch over. But if we take it to the extreme of paranoia, and then our kids are continually protected, are they going to be really prepared when they step out into life? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Next one, and I really like this one, the decline of play. Now, I'm not meaning to swing the pendulum, but sometimes maybe it needs to swing. Of course, all the liberals and progressives would say there's no need for education whatsoever. All the kids need to do is play and experience things, and that's what teaches them. But that kind of backfired because now it's just, we turn from that into all the Common Core standards, and they need all these things. We're going to talk about that for just a few minutes. Children deprived of play are less likely to become competent adults. That is from statistical studies, research studies that have been done. You know, those, then they did this study. People that were spending more time with their screens. You know, Pastor talked about this before, that, you know, what are we doing? We're focusing on what man has made. We're spending our time on man things. And what does that take us away from? Well, what's outside? What God made. This is what man made. Out there in that world is what God made. And we're avoiding it. We're not going outside and playing. And we're being cautious and fragile and all these other things. Children deprived of play are less likely to become competent adults. That came right from a research study. They seem, this kid noted, he said, the tendency of kids to introduce danger and risk into outdoor free play, like climbing walls, climbing trees, skateboarding down a staircase or a railing. And you see the kids out there today, they've got the elbow pad, the knee pad, the whole chest protector body kit, and they're just, you know, ready to skate like this. Just real easy. I mean, we just did some things that maybe we look back, like Mr. Brainerd said this morning, why did I do that? Climbing trees. All right, we're up here. Maybe I can land on that roof from up here. We tried things like that. We'd climb up. One time we climbed up into a tree, and it was a huge pecan tree in my dad's house. It ended up getting torn down in a hurricane. But it went up massive, and up at the top, it split off into two like this. And there was this little carved out hole where it met. And water would always pool up in there, and we'd climb up there and see it. One day, my brother climbed up there, and there was a snake in there. I never climbed that tree again, ever. I'll tell you that. And I was happy the day it came down. I wasn't about to go up there and see Mr. Snake. And we had walnut trees, dogwood trees, pecan trees, pine trees. And we were always climbing up in them, playing, just climbing a tree. I don't know what was fun about it. We just thought it was challenging and fun. So, you know, those kind of things, it's introducing danger and risk. It introduces risk. And you learn how to deal with that. They're dosing, this research said, they're dosing themselves with moderate degrees of fear. And they're learning how to deal with the challenges that come with that. But today it's declined. Outdoor play is declining in America. The study showed several things here. That this was back 1997, 16% overall it had declined. And they did other studies to show that even more declination in that. And of course with the I generation that grew up with all of these things and grew up with the internet and the tablets and all that, they're spending much more time interacting with their screens, interacting with their technologies. Yeah, sure, it could be considered some form of social interaction, but it's this. It's a lot of it is an unreal world. It's an unreal world. It's things that are not real. And these kids growing up believing and thinking, that was like Mr. Brainerd said, you know, we used to do baseball cards. They were real people. They were like walking human beings that actually swung the bats and hit the ball or shot the basketball. They were real people. And now we've got all kinds of crazy stuff and then there's this anime things and all kinds of stuff. And it's a fake world. It's a fake made up human world. And it's consuming the time. We've been depriving our young people then by opportunities to be exposed to risk. That's terrible parenting. We need to be exposed to risk. Learn how the brakes work on your bike or don't work. My brother Daniel was the world's worst at figuring out how brakes work. He was always crashing into something, busting his head open. I don't know how many times he ran into our walnut tree and his bike was all bent up into 15 pieces. But he learned, I guess, the hard way how the brakes work on the bike. And, you know, Dad wasn't out there, oh no, easy. And this, again, I get it. I know the reasons why people do it, but wearing a biking helmet? Yeah, we were out there like, I don't know, tearing out Evel Knievel or something, just tearing through. And now, you know, if a cop sees a kid without a helmet, they about go, I mean, they have, it's the law. They have to. It's the law. They got to enforce it. But we've kind of overprotected, and I get the reasons why. But I mean, I see them out there in body armor from like the tip of their toes to the top of their skull. In case they fall, they won't skin their elbow. Skin your elbow! Go in there and pour some peroxide on it and alcohol and it burns. Let me tell you, Mommy, don't do it! Ah! And then you realize, oh, I'm still breathing, I'm alive. It's okay. Take some small risks. But we've taken those things away. Another little thing here. We've added more, and the book brings out this study, that we've taken away the free play, we've added in more homework and more supervised things. Now, homework's not a bad thing, but let's talk about it for a minute. Like in kindergarten. Kindergarten. They've declined in the ability for play. I'm glad our kids go out on the playground. I'm glad our teachers take them out for a PE time. And there's some, you know, I remember the old days, we'd be out there at recess, and it's Red Rover, send Adam right over, and it's clotheslining on the neck. And you do a backflip there, and you know, you get up and you go right back at it. Of course, that's all illegal today. And the seesaw. Where's the seesaws at? I mean, I love them. We used to get on them things, and we'd try to see who can launch who, buddy. We'd go up, and I just flung that thing down and hammer as fast as I could. See how high you can jump out of your seat. We thought it was cool. Hey, man, hit me real hard. I want to go high. And flipped over that a couple times, busted my head open. But you know what? It was fun. Took a little risk. Maybe got a little injuries or here. Maybe that's why my hair fell out or maybe why I'm kind of dumb. I don't know. But we had a good time. We were out there, you know, doing things. And I know you got to be careful. And I know there's lawsuit issues and things. But they're telling kindergartners the Common Core standards and all those things that came. And they're teaching them that they need to be able to critically think. That's more important. A five-year-old. When's snack time? You know, I mean, you got some real critical thinkers in your classroom. They're just ready to go. The five-year-old, I mean, they can hardly tie their shoes sometimes. Where am I? Get them out in the playground, they're having a good time. That's fine. They're forcing this. I mean, again, what's it all tied to? It's all tied to money. Common Core standards. Oh, if you do this, we'll give you some more federal funding. And that federal funding is like 8 to 10% of the overall state budget. So we sell our souls for that 8 to 10%. And we have to do all these things for even little kindergartners. So we don't have time to go out and play. There's risks out there. You might get hurt. You know, I love the World War II generation. If we went through that today, we would lose. I'm going to tell you, we'd lose. You imagine me and a 17, 18-year-old kid, a man, I should say, they were men, holding a gun, going to Normandy, the gate falls and everybody dies. And you know it's going to happen going in. We're over there. We were playing volleyball for our PT. I tell you, we've lost manhood, it seems. We've lost it. And we're just all just easy and we just got to critically think and reason and all these things. And, kids need to be taught some hardship. Kids need to be taught some risk. I'm going to read a couple things. Back in 1979, I wasn't alive. I was born in 1980. Here was is your child ready for first grade in 1979? Now, I'm not even going to ask if you were teaching then. I'm kidding. I'm just joking, Ms. Erickson. But listen to this. Will your child be 6 years, 6 months or older when it begins first grade and start receiving reading instruction? That was the first question. Number two, does your child have 2 to 5 permanent or second teeth? Number three, can your child tell in such a way that his speech is understood by a school crossing guard or policeman where he lives? What does that assume? That 6-year-olds are strong enough to walk to school and communicate with a Mr. Police Officer who is my friend and helper. Today we teach them that the police officers are terrible people. And they're the oppressors. Number four, can he draw and color and stay within the lines of the design? Number five, can he stand on 1 foot with his eyes closed for 5 to 10 seconds? Number six, can he ride a small 2-wheeled bicycle without training wheels? Number seven, can he tell his right hand from his left hand? Now listen to this one. Number eight, can he travel? This is the first grader. Can he travel alone in the neighborhood 4 to 8 blocks to a store, a school, a playground, or a friend's house? 6-year-old. Number nine, this is what they asked to see if they were ready for first grade. Can he be away from you all day without being upset? Boy, if we asked the first grade parents that today, we'd have a conniption on our hands. Number 10, can he repeat an 8 to 10 word sentence if you say it once, as in the boy ran all the way home from the store? Even those sentences that they used imply the kid was by himself running away, running home. Number 11, can he count 8 to 10 pennies correctly? And number 12, does your child try to write or copy letters or numbers? That was it, 1979. And a lot of that involved just physical ability and common sense stuff. Here's the current one. Here's today. Here's a checklist from today. A school in Austin, Texas had 30 items on it. Almost all of them were academic. Now, there's nothing wrong with academic. We test our kids to see where they are. But because we focused on screens and all these other stuff, they can't do some of the physical stuff. They don't have the common sense to be able to walk home. They run away from the police officer because we've taught them they're a victim and they're the oppressors. Here's what it is. Identify and write numbers to 100. Count by 10s to 100, by 2s to 20, by 5s to 100. Those are good things, and our first graders can do that. They do that in our graduation practice in K-5. Listen to this one. Interpret and fill in data on a graph. A first grader. Interpret and fill in data on a graph. I mean, what is this? The statistics course we have to take, Kyle? I don't know. Read all kindergarten level sight words. I won't get off on that one. Be able to read books with 5 to 10 words a page and form complete sentences on paper using phonetic spelling, as in journal and story writing. Those are all good things. Those are all admirable goals. But the problem is the absence of all the other things. The common sense things. Because, we've got to show that we're having these kids doing all these things so we can get our government money. That's what it's all about. And this has, of course, a large effect on our society in general. Our time is gone, and I'm going to close with this one little sentence. I'm skipping several things here, but I really thought this was important. Oh, I'm skipping some good stuff. But this is John Roberts. Everybody know who John Roberts is? Chief Justice, Supreme Court. Here's what he said in 2017. He was invited to speak at his son's graduation from middle school. Here's what he said. This is what we'll close with. Part of it. From time to time in the years to come, I hope you will be treated unfairly so you will know the value of justice. I hope you will suffer betrayal because that will teach you the importance of loyalty. Sorry to say, but I hope you will be lonely from time to time, so that you don't take your friends for granted. I wish you bad luck. I wish you bad luck from time to time, so you will be conscious of the role of chance in life and understand your success is not completely deserved, and that the failure of others is not completely deserved either. And when you lose, as you will from time, he's telling these people they're going to lose. What's his problem? He's supposed to be up there encouraging us. When you lose, I hope every now and then your opponent will gloat over your failure. He's telling the winner to gloat over you. It is a way for you to understand the importance of sportsmanship. I hope you'll be ignored so you know the importance of listening to others. I hope you will have just enough pain to learn compassion. Whether I wish these things or not, they're going to happen. And whether you benefit from them or not will depend on your ability to see the message in the misfortune. Bad things are going to happen. Misfortune's going to come. We've taught an entire generation to go cry home to mommy about it and to feel sorry for yourself instead of, what can I learn from this? And I thought about this. You know, we don't have to, okay, here's the guy gloating over me. He's gloating over my failure so I can learn the benefits of being a good sport. In other words, I don't have to answer for the gloater. I don't have to answer for it. Let him gloat. That's his business. That's his problem. But I can learn, man, I didn't like it when somebody did that to me. I'm going to be a good sport and I'm going to congratulate them. And even though they lost, I'm going to tell them they fought hard. You know, again, we've been through in the conference here, we've been through all kinds of terrible situations of sportsmanship and so forth. And you're just like, I've gotten to the point where, you know what? I don't write other schools. I don't tell them things because they're going to answer for it. It's none of my business. But we try to teach our young people how to react to that. It took me a long time to get there. It's hard. It's hard. It grates you. It makes you upset. But why? So we can see the message in the misfortune. God brings these things into our lives so we can learn. But if we're coddling the American mind, coddle them. Teach them to feel sorry for themselves, that you're a poor little victim. This is what we get. Pray the Lord to help us to have wisdom. And I know, again, some of these things that we need to be careful. We need to be cautious, obviously, but have common sense. And we didn't get to the next reason, which is the bureaucracy and the laws and all these other things and the way colleges are geared these days to promote this stuff. We'll get into that hopefully next time. But I pray that we'll have some wisdom with our young people, wisdom with our students in the classroom, wisdom on how to raise them to be able to handle adversity. Because guess what? It's going to come. Going to come, like it or not. And we're going to have problems and situations that arise and things that are hard for us to bear and things that aren't fair. We hear a lot about that today. You got to be fair. No, like, you don't have to be fair. You don't have to be fair. People are going to treat you unfairly. So quit crying about it. That's what you have to teach. Quit crying about it and do what's right and have a good attitude anyway. You don't have to answer for it. That's life. And that's a life where that, Lord, help me to learn from this. And help me to grow stronger in you through these circumstances. Father, thank you so much for how your word instructs us. I know many of these things are just secular, even psychological type things, Father, but they have a lot of common sense, practical usages. Lord, help us to not be self-pitying. That is nothing but pride. It's pride. Lord, help us to humbly seek your face and humbly say, Lord, help me to learn. Help me to follow you. And to trust you for the outcomes. Lord, give us grace, wisdom in the days in which we live. In Christ's name, amen.